A few years back, my friend Justin Warner from Food Network moved out to South Dakota. He opened a ramen joint, and he is always posting pictures of all the great food he's not only cooking, but eating all over South Dakota. He's always telling me to come visit. And you know, one of the best ways to experience a new place is to eat your way through it. But it's equally important to live your way through it, too. And when you summer in South Dakota, you can fill up on all the lake days, hikes, rides, and small-town strolls that'll leave you with a regained sense of wonder and a hunger to do it all over again. See why there's so much South Dakota, so little time at TravelSouthDakota.com.
We also didn't have cereal with milk.
Your whole growing up, you never ate cereal with milk?
I still never have.
No.
You've never in your life. How old are you?
We're 27.
This is Laura and Beth. They're twin sisters, and they are very picky eaters. What's another food that most people would consider commonplace that you've never tried?
How much time do you have?
All the time in the world, Beth.
Cauliflower, no. Broccoli, no. Peppers, no. Squash, no. Pumpkins.
No.
What about mac and cheese?
Not really.
Plain pasta with butter?
Not with butter, but I like it with whatever red sauce that is.
Have you ever had soup?
Like, it's just like water with flavor. It doesn't seem all that appetizing. No.
Beth and Laura grew up as picky eaters. That was just fine with their parents.
My parents met at a talent show for accountants.
This is already the best beginning of
right?
a story that's ever been told in life.
I know. They're so excellent. My dad was the writer of the show. My mom had tried to come in to play the bassoon, but they forced her to be a dancer because she was just tall. And he asked her out on a date, and they went on their first date to McDonald's. And apparently, back at the time they went at McDonald's, like, you couldn't be like, I want pickles and this. They just gave you a hamburger.
You couldn't have it your way.
Right.
Have it your way might actually be the Burger King slogan, but let's not split hairs.
Uh-oh.
You get the idea.
Uh-oh, yeah.
Anyway, they got
so
their
they
burgers.
They get their burgers. They both sit down from across from each other. They, like, unwrap it, and they both pulled open the burgers and wiped off, as my dad would still call it to this day, green stuff. All of the pickles, all of the relish, like anything on there, because they don't eat it at all. They both wiped it off at the same time. And we're like, this is it. That's how they knew.
They gazed into each other's eyes.
That's what our father says, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in that moment.
Yeah. They knew.
That was love.
That was love. They're like,
yes.
My parents found in each other that they were picky eaters, which is, I think, more intense of a kindred spiritedness than people might realize. If you're not a picky eater, you don't realize how important it would be to be with a fellow picky eater.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. I've already kicked off my Sporkful Live Anything's Possible tour. Thank you so much to everyone who's come out. It's been great to meet so many of you in person. Next up, we got D.C. tomorrow night, April 2nd, with Patty Hinnich. Can't wait for that. Then Philly at WHYY with Kehlani Palmisano. And I was going to say Boston, but the Boston show is already sold out. And the tickets for these other shows are going fast. San Francisco, Seattle, L.A. Get your tickets now at sporkful.com/tour. And of course, you can still order my cookbook, Anything's Possible. It's out now wherever books are sold. I did especially love the review from Library Journal. They said, if Willy Wonka and Alton Brown collaborated on a pasta cookbook, the end result might be something like this, revolutionary in all the right ways. So that was very nice. Thank you, Library Journal. And of course, if you want to know more about the making of this book, go back and check out our special series about the making of Anything's Possible right here on The Sporkful. It's up now. All right, let's get to today's show. Laura and Beth are the twin sisters you heard at the beginning. As you were listening to them and the story of their parents, what did you think of them? Is there some part of you that judged them? Maybe just a little? Did you feel sorry for them? Or were you like, yes, finally, The Sporkful is featuring people just like me? Well, get ready, because today we're exploring what it's like to go through life as a picky eater. And we'll ask, why do picky eaters face so much judgment? Laura and Beth are fraternal twins, not identical, which is important to note here as we tell their story. The truth is that research on picky eating is still pretty limited. And the area that's especially unknown is the role of DNA in determining our eating preferences. It's safe to say it's some combination of nature and nurture, but how much of it is each one and how do the two interact? We really don't know. These days, Laura and Beth live in different cities. When they were kids, the dinner menu at home in the Chicago suburbs was pretty limited.
We would have a rotation of chicken, turkey, every now and again, ham.
Wild night.
I'm missing pork chops, a pizza once a week, and then like a red meat.
A lot of the times in high school, Beth and I were in a lot of extracurriculars, and we would stay till 9 p.m. And my mom would drop off our dinner for us, which was often a like a carnival pretzel. Like that would be our dinner.
Like a big fresh baked soft pretzel.
Yes,
a
frozen and then heated up.
Defrosted. Yeah, from a Sam's Club we would just buy like giant boxes of these pretzels and those would be our dinner. Like okay. A pretzel and some grapes and some Cheez-Its.
So what'd you eat at Thanksgiving?
Turkey.
Turkey, but oftentimes bought from, what's that place?
Boston Market.
So Thanksgiving, imagine a lot of plastic containers where you're opening and reheating things. You're like, thank God Boston Market is around because no one wanted to cook this.
This approach to eating that you guys grew up with, like, was it discussed? Was it something you were all aware of growing up?
I don't really think we really realized that we were picky eaters because, like, you go over to a friend's house and it was a special thing if you stayed for dinner. So most of the time it was like pizza or, you know, you stayed because you knew what they were having and you liked what they were having.
Right. I think you can just go so long as a kid going from like pizza party to pizza party that you think a larger percentage of people are just eating pizza all the time. Like, you're like, well, that's what I have, like, every other weekend at these birthday parties. Right. So I would definitely say around, like, 16, 17, when people would be, like, you know, in our suburban town, they'd be like, let's drive to the Panera. And you realize they're just, like, ordering anything, soups. I'd never had a soup. You know, I'm like, how do you know you like soup? Really realizing.
But I get the impression that it was almost like a point of pride for your parents.
It is for my dad.
Yes.
My dad has definitely equated pickiness with simplicity, which he's a great guy. But I don't think that's necessarily accurate. You can have a really simple salad with three ingredients and it could still be delicious and simple.
Right. So, Laura, just to sort of illustrate what life was like growing up and your dad in particular's approach to the picky eater's lifestyle,
yeah.
You have brought in a cookbook.
I have.
A family heirloom, looks like.
A treasure.
Only 10 were made.
It's called Dad's Personal Favorites, The Clean Oven Cookbook. This cookbook Beth and Laura's dad made, it looks like it was printed at Kinko's. He made it as a joke. It was a gift for family members. But it also sort of plays as a picky eater's manifesto. The dedication is dedicated to those who have enjoyed my cooking all of these years and others who may appreciate a unique Epicurean approach that embraces the concepts of simplicity, 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 and no sauces.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the best presents I've ever gotten, for sure.
So there's a first chapter, appetizers. Dad's appetizer advice. Don't waste stomach space on appetizers with all the good stuff to come.
Yeah,
so there are no appetizers.
Just no appetizers.
Okay.
I mean, unless you're going to get like a pretzel roll, no point.
Walk me through the next section here, Laura.
Sure. The first entree is the cheese sandwich. So we have my dad holding a loaf of rye bread and Kraft American singles in his photo. Step one, make sure rye bread is fresh and has plenty of seeds.
I'm surprised he goes for the seeds.
I know. The one thing my dad likes these days are radishes. Doesn't that seem strange?
It is, because they're spicy when you just bite into them like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's surprising.
Are they? I've never had one. I'll take your word for it.
Beth doesn't know. Okay, second page.
I love that the final recipe, in quotes, is Oreos. And it says, enjoy the perfect cookie as Nabisco and God intended. Yield, 30 Oreos equals 2 servings.
Yeah. It's like, oh, God, it's terrible.
Way too many.
Way too many for a serving.
So you get the idea. Laura and Beth not only grew up as picky eaters with picky eater parents, but picky eating was a part of their family identity. When it came time to go to college, Beth and Laura chose different paths. Beth decided to commute to school and continue living at home with their parents. Laura went away to college and lived on campus. That's where she first encountered a strange new world, the dining hall.
And so there were all of these other women my age who just like knew how to make these glorious salads. And I, again, it was like the same with soup. I just didn't even know how you knew what to put in a salad. Like salads are very mysterious to me. So I would just sit at these meals with these people who had all these options and not only were just like, because you could order something from a grill, but they could go beyond that. They could like ask for what they wanted. They were like, I like this meat and this cheese and this vegetable together. And I had no idea like what combinations the general public agrees are good combinations of like of food, like a Reuben. I wouldn't have been able to put that together myself. So it was clear to me like they knew what they were hungry for and could listen to their body in a way that I had not yet developed.
Right. And they had been exposed to enough different foods and eaten enough different foods that they had some sort of like wealth of experience to draw from.
Exactly.
But then came the night of the quesadilla.
My turning point was a night where I didn't have anything to eat, and I'd gone out with some people from my a cappella group, and we'd gone to Whole Foods, and I'd bought a quesadilla. And in my mind, a quesadilla, I could handle that. It was just like a chicken one, so chicken and cheese. And then it came with all of this stuff I was not expecting on the inside. And I was sort of—
Green stuff, as your dad might call it.
Green stuff, as my dad might call it. And I was picking through it, single-handedly pulling out like a mushroom or a pepper, whatever was in there. And my friends were just like looking at me with such pity. And I was like, I just don't want to live my life like this. I want to be able to eat this quesadilla.
But so it sounds to me what you're saying, Laura, is that it was more social pressure than some sort of desire to be like a culinary explorer.
Yeah, no, I think that's true.
You weren't like, I want to taste all that it is the world has to offer. It was more like, I want to hang out with these people.
Yeah, I want to hang out with these people. And I think I wanted to be less afraid. So then from then, I started just trying things that people would like. At my sorority house, if people would order Chinese food, I might, like, try a piece of chicken or something like that. And then someone invited me out to sushi, which was, to me, sushi was, like, my white whale. And I only had one or two because I was, like, very nervous. I was very nervous. But I had the very, like, Western-y one, you know, the ones with, like, cream cheese.
Right.
Like, I had one of those to start. I remember being a little uncomfortable with the texture and being like, oh, it's so, like, kind of mushy. And I tried sushi intermittently over the few years until recently, within the last year, my boyfriend, we went back to his college, and he was like, let's just try some sushi again. And I did, and this time I was like, oh, I get it. Now I'm having the crab roll, eel.
In the 15 years since Laura first walked into that campus dining hall, she's gotten more and more adventurous. She later moved to New York City and then L.A., trying new foods in both places. But what about Beth? As I said, she commuted to college and continued to live with her picky-eating parents. She didn't have a meal plan at an all-you-can-eat dining hall. She had to buy her lunch a la carte.
You know, I don't want to get something and then not like it. So I normally just stuck with my turkey sandwich with warm bacon every day. And the people actually knew my order. I'd come up in line. They'd go the usual. And I'd say, yep.
And so what do you have for lunch now?
I have a mixture of Cheerios, carrots, strawberries, or grapes, and some pretzels.
Beth, when you hear Laura talking about the sushi that she's eating, how do you feel about that?
I'm happy that she's happy. I mean, as she said earlier, the whole food thing was never a big deal because it brought everyone together. So, you know, she's eating sushi. Great. If she enjoys it, it doesn't matter to me. I'm just happy that she found more food she likes. I mean, that's something as someone who's a picky eater, I don't care if you like the food. If it makes you happy, great. It just doesn't make me happy. Other things make me happy.
Like puzzles.
Yes, jigsaw puzzles.
So is there any food, Beth, that makes you really happy?
Oh, I love a good chips and salsa, but only the Tostitos chunky mediums salsa. Ooh, nothing bundt cake bundt cakes. Have you ever had one of those? Those are amazing. Oh, what's the bagel place near you that we
I brought Beth to Absolute Bagels on like 107th.
Ooh. Okay.
Yum.
She had,
I mean,
a bagel.
With turkey and bacon, and it was really great.
And so, Beth, do you look forward to meals?
I mean, it depends on who's at said meal. When everyone is home, when we were all home a couple of weeks ago for the holidays, meals were great and they were super fun. So my brother and his wife would cook, my sister would eat it, and then I'd have something else. You know, it was great.
But Beth says most of the time she doesn't look forward to going out to eat.
We went to a restaurant a couple of weeks ago for our birthday, and we go to the Cheesecake Factory, and I always get two grilled chicken breasts plain with a side of French fries. That's my favorite. And the waitress was like, is this all you're going to eat? Like, don't you want more food? This won't fill you up. And she was just like very aggressive because my mom and I both ordered the same thing. And we were kind of like, no, we're good. We're good. And it's really uncomfortable when stuff like that happens. Or, I mean, people I know pointed out to other people So, like, I went to a lunch. I went to a lunch with some coworkers and another person, and somebody completely pointed it out to everybody what I had chosen to eat, which was, I thought, uncalled for, but I was like, oh, yeah, you know, this is what I like. And I just wish people wouldn't do that, because it makes me kind of anxious to go out with anybody, because it's like, oh, if I don't know the person, if I don't know some of their friends, are they going to point it out to more people?
Beth says she has no interest in trying new foods, in following Laura's path. She's happy eating what she eats. She just wishes people would leave her alone about it.
I just avoid the topic of food, because sometimes you get alienated when you are a picky eater. And so my defense has always been to avoid and to change the subject. If I could, I would just take a pill where I didn't have to eat anything. So it'd be like, take a pill, and then I'd be full all day, and I would be like a comfortable full, and then I wouldn't have to worry about it.
Why would that be preferable?
Because then no one would judge me.
What do you think they think of you?
That I don't have great taste in food would be my thought. I mean, I don't think it changes their opinion of me. I just think it's another facet to my personality.
I think people think it's childish as well.
Oh.
That
makes...
The truth comes out. I think people... think it's childish, yeah. Because I think it's taken me a long time to not see it as childishness. My growth in enjoying food so perfectly, like, aligned with me getting older. but it's still, when I look back, like, it happened so much later. It happened later in my life than a lot of people. Like, most people don't wait till they're 21.
Well, yeah, but people always ask me, like, oh, you must have grown up and, like, been obsessed with food. But, like, Right. Well, yes, I always, even as a kid, I always loved to eat. I got a lot of pleasure from eating. But I was not an especially adventurous eater. I was well into my 30s before I liked plain tomatoes, anything like mustard, olives, pickles, those kind of like, or spicy foods, any kind of like those strong, sharp, acidic, or bitter, or hot flavors I didn't like until at least my mid-30s.
Interesting.
And it was only when I made a concerted effort. I kind of like got to a point in my life where I was like, you know, like you get burnt out on your music, you're like, I need a new playlist or something?
Yeah.
I got like that with food.
Oh my gosh,
and so I made a concerted effort to start to get used to eating more different things. But I wasn't like that when I was young, you know? Mm-hmm. I could have eaten egg and cheese sandwiches for weeks.
Right.
What I'm really curious about to explore in this, in our conversation here in this series that we're doing is why, though? Like, why does it matter? Like, if you're healthy, if you're going to the doctor and the doctor says you're fine, then why does it matter? I'm curious to try to understand where that judgment comes from. Do you have a theory, Laura?
Well, I think people always just want to share something that they love with you. Like, I'm enjoying this avocado toast with my pickled onion so much. Like, I just want Beth to have a bite so we can experience this together. And that is I've learned a selfish way of, like, Beth will definitely not get the same pleasure out of this thing that I'm eating.
As Laura continues to try more new foods, her eating habits move further away from Beth's and their parents. That family identity of picky eating, that's not Laura's identity anymore. Over Christmas, she was really craving Magnolia Bakery's banana pudding. She decided to make it for everyone, but she knew Beth and their parents wouldn't like it. The picky side of the family doesn't eat bananas. So for them, Laura made a separate batch of quote-unquote banana pudding, except it had no bananas. And instead of the traditional Nilla wafers, she used Oreos, because as you'll recall, her dad considers Oreos to be the perfect food. So he promised to try it.
So he did try it. He just didn't think it was as good as a regular Oreo.
And how did that make you feel?
Like, I had it coming, because if you are a member of a family where people don't like to try new foods, like, you're never going to make something that changes that.
So why, Laura? Why'd you make this banana pudding dish knowing on some level that your family wasn't going to like it?
Well, I thought if I could change every single ingredient to be not what Magnolia Bakery makes actually, that they might enjoy it. And it just felt like if I could be sitting there eating my banana pudding and you could be sitting there eating your chocolate pudding, but I'd made them both and they're both in the same idea, then we're almost eating the same thing. And we can, like, look at each other and be like, this is good. We're having the same meal and agree on something that's good.
You thought that you guys would connect over it.
Yeah, I did.
That's what you were hoping for.
I thought that we would connect over it because the more that I eat and get connection with other people, the more I've started to like crave it with my family. We have many other things we connect over, but you know, it feels like such a big, giant thing in my life that I no longer like. It feels like an absence in my family that could be filled if I make the right pudding.
One note to add. As I said, we still don't know how much of our eating habits are nature and how much are nurture. Maybe Beth was just born a culinary homebody. She could be the type who prefers to stay in her comfort zone. Or maybe a change of environment would make a difference. Laura and Beth do have a brother, Michael, and his story is similar to Laura's. He grew up picky, went away to college, got into food. When he got married recently, Laura gave a toast at the wedding. She said, "According to my parents, the first thing Michael ever did wrong was to try sushi. The second thing he ever did wrong was to like it." Coming up, we'll turn our attention to the most common group of picky eaters, kids. I'll talk with an expert who treats picky eaters, and yeah, we'll talk about some of his techniques, but the big question I have is picky eating actually even a problem? Stick around.
Time to cook up some advertisements.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, a business tripper, or a long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. They've got over 7,000 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels, and you will get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. I especially love those Cambria Hotels. They have locally inspired hotel bars with all kinds of specialty cocktails, downtown locations right in the center of all the action. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces. That way, if you're a business traveler, you'll be able to get all your work done. On-site restaurants, fantastic. And then at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles and great pools for the whole family and spacious rooms. I mean, if you have kids, you understand the importance of the pool. If you stay at a hotel with a pool, almost nothing else matters. Fortunately, all the Choice Hotels take care of all the other stuff too, but I mean, a pool is a great start. Whatever kind of vacation you're going on, whatever kind of travel you're doing, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. If you're like me, the first thing you do when traveling is check out what's happening with the local food scene, right? And as I've been planning my big book tour and live podcast tapings all around the country, man, I am very excited to eat my way across the nation. There's Atlanta, there's Miami, and so many more. Getting a taste of local food is the best way to get to know the local culture. And if you travel, you know that's how it's done. The Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about $10 a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. At Boar's Head, delicious is in the details. And you see that in their incredible selection of hummus flavors. Boar's Head hummus is expertly crafted to achieve the perfect balance of creamy texture and refined taste. You can taste those chickpeas. You can taste the tahini. You can taste a little bit of acidity. It's got it all. I especially love their roasted red pepper hummus made with fire roasted peppers. You can even taste a little bit of that char. It's perfectly dippable. It's perfectly spreadable. This is the kind of thing you always want to have on hand in your refrigerator. Dip, scoop, spread, or smear Boar's Head hummus to your heart's content. Hummus so extraordinary, it can only be Boar's Head. Compromise elsewhere. I just got a very wonderful shipment of goodies from the folks at Reese's. And let me tell you something. These people remain the absolute worldwide leaders in bringing together chocolate and peanut butter. Of course, we know that peanut butter cups remain transcendent. But have you tried the Reese's Sticks? They're wafers with peanut butter in between each wafer, all coated in chocolate. I mean, the combination of sweet chocolate and salty peanut butter just brings people joy, and the folks at Reese's do it better than anyone. So shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. If you haven't heard our podcast series, Anything's Possible, you got to check it out. It's the behind-the-scenes story of the making of my cookbook, also called Anything's Possible, from the highs and lows of recipe testing to my research trip across Italy to some brutally honest feedback from my wife and kids to the agonizing decisions over the design of the cover. By the end of this series, I don't think you're ever going to look at a cookbook the same way again. It's quite a ride, and I hope you'll join me on it. All four episodes are up right now in your feed. Check it out. Now, back to the show. So, Laura and Beth helped us understand what it's like to be a picky eater as an adult. Now we'll turn our attention to kids and the people who feed them. Because I can tell you, as a parent myself, it's stressful when a kid refuses to eat anything half healthy. It's hard when you go to a restaurant or someone else's house for dinner and your kid won't eat anything there. Picky eating is a big source of stress for parents. Now, I want to be clear here at the top. For the purposes of this conversation, we aren't talking about the most acute cases where a kid may be losing weight or malnourished, or where there's a more serious underlying issue like OCD, autism, or PICO, which is a disorder where people eat things like dirt or paint. We're talking here about kids who are otherwise healthy, but they're just really picky eaters. Chris Rutt knows the type. He holds a PhD in clinical psychology and works at the Boston Child Study Center. When he was a postdoc, parents would bring him kids with all kinds of psychological and behavioral issues. And one of the big ones he saw treated a lot was picky eating. It's an issue he knows well.
I was a pretty picky eater when I was a kid, and now I listen to your podcast every week and love bragging about my kids eating fancy foods over other people's kids. I'm just kidding.
Well, it sounds like you're definitely a great parent, Chris.
Well, I have a lot of pressure based on what my profession is.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Totally.
Yeah, it's like, man, I got to be careful about what parties I go to, because if my kids aren't acting the way they need to, people are going to start eyeballing me.
Right. Yeah. And because you're a general specialist in all kinds of childhood behavior, there's really no escape right. for you.
There's none. There's none at all.
Chris, how has having kids yourself changed the way you talk to parents who are dealing with picky eaters?
I think that when I walk in and I sit down with a family and I talk about, you know, having to put my daughter in time out because of the craziness she was doing, there's a little bit of like, yeah, you've been there, man. Like, yeah, we know what it's like.
Right, and
I get a lot of buy-in from that.
Chris is quick to stress that there's no single solution for picky eating. He would sit with families to understand what's happening at mealtime, then offer various strategies. What works for one kid may not work for another. Sometimes it's a control issue. Sometimes it's sensory. The child may struggle with certain textures. And studies suggest a kid may have to try a food 30 or 40 times before learning to like it. Am I right, Chris, that picky eating, certainly among 3, 4, 5, 6-year-olds, is actually considered normal? Like, it's so common that it's considered normal.
Yeah, I think you could make that claim. I think, you know, when we look at the research out there, we don't have a perfect sense of what the true prevalence is, but it could be as high as, you know, 50% or more of kids, especially in that age range. You hit it right on the dot where it's kids from 3 to 6 tends to be the highest risk. And so you could potentially make an argument, right? If it's 50% of kids, what is normal? And is it just makes sense that kids at that age level just go through this period of time where they have some difficulties or aversion to new foods, and that's kind of how it goes.
Well, it certainly makes sense from an evolutionary standpoint to me.
For sure.
Like, you know, the kids who are walking through the forest eating every berry and mushroom mm-hmm. that they pass aren't going to last long.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense that the ones who are more cautious would be the ones who would survive and thrive.
For sure. Absolutely.
So why is picky eating a problem?
Academics would argue that, you know, there's a potential for picky eating having some long-term consequences, right? And especially, you know, growing up in an age where, you know, pediatric obesity is a significant problem. What role does picky eating playing in that? Because there's some arguments that picky eating is a pretty, it's a trait that can continue on into older ages and adolescence and maybe even adulthood. And does that play a role? And I don't think we can answer that yet, right? So from my end, when I work with families, I try to frame it more of like, how distressed does this make kids and parents, and how much does it interfere in their daily life?
So there are two main reasons to worry about picky eating in an otherwise healthy child. One, it could lead to unhealthy habits as an adult. And two, it creates stress for parents and by association, kids. Let's take these in order. Now, there's a fair amount of research that one of the biggest factors that determines what you eat as an adult is what you see your parents eating when you're a kid. In fact, Chris says if he had to choose between a child eating more vegetables at a young age or seeing the parents eating more vegetables, he'd take the parents. So even if your kids eat very few veggies now, if you can get them to try even just a tiny bit of healthy food over time, help them work their way to those 30 or 40 tastes while modeling healthy eating for them, the research says that in the long run, they should be fine. Second issue, picky eating creates stress for parents and kids. But as I told Chris, it seems to me the only reason it creates stress is that parents are convinced it's a problem. Chris, I want to read a quote to you from a paper in Current Opinion in Psychiatry. The paper is called Picky Eating, the Current State of Research. And there is a line in here that says, a recent study has confirmed previous findings of an association between child picky eating behavior and maternal mental health and self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And it says this is based on the idea that seeing their child eat enough was central to being a successful parent for many of these parents. Unpack that for me a little bit.
I'll do my best. I want to put the disclaimer that I don't have that paper in front of me, and I'm not sure if I read that one or not, but you know, if I had to kind of hypothesize as far as what I think's going on there, right, is as parents, right, and I have three kids, you know, a big part of our identity is our children, and we want them to be successful, and we want them to do the right things, and we want them to be happy and healthy. And so if I had a child who wasn't eating up to the standards that I expected or was causing a lot of these behavior problems because of food, that's increased stress. And one of the things that we know of mental health, a precursor of mental health, is the amount of stress that we as individuals encounter on a daily basis. So I definitely could see that if you have a picky eater as a child, and this is a consistent and persistent problem, that could really increase the amount of stress for a parent and potentially result in a parent having their own difficulties with some mental health problems.
So then how much of the treatment for picky eating is to find tips and tricks to get the kid to eat more, and how much should be to explain to the parent that actually maybe in some cases it's not a big deal?
Oh, I think both. I think a big part of my role and my colleague's role is trying to provide that education piece, because being a parent is hard. And most of the ways that we learn how to be a parent is from trial and error or from conversations with other parents. People always say, you know, there's no book on raising a child, which is
actually, I think there's like several hundred million books.
There's so many of them.
It's a billion dollar industry.
There's so many of them.
The problem is not, Chris, that there's no book on how to raise a child. The problem is there are too many.
I would agree. That's a whole different problem, right? It's like, how do I pick the best one? So that's the part of my job that I really enjoy, is how can I step into that role and help guide families in a direction based on evidence and research that hopefully is helpful and can reduce some of those problems and stress at home. This could be a very normal process that your child's going through. A lot of kids experience it.
I guess part of what I'm stuck on here, Chris, is that I feel like there's an underlying assumption under the discussion around picky eating that if you're even if your kid is otherwise healthy, mm-hmm. if they're just picky, even at an age when it's very common to be picky, that that is a problem. And the underlying assumption there is that somehow it's the parents' fault that they have failed to unlock this puzzle, they have failed to use the right technique, that there's a lot of judgment of parents, that parents feel like somehow they have mm-hmm. failed if their mm-hmm. child is not eating a diverse diet. Mm-hmm. And by the opposite token, I often see parents who have kids who are adventurous eaters bragging about how their kids eat so many different things, as if that somehow yeah. makes their child more virtuous or makes them a better parent.
For sure.
And I really want to push back against that underlying assumption.
Fair. Yeah, I got your back on this one, Dan.
Okay.
I mean, I think as parents, right, there is a little piece of like the keeping up with the Joneses where we don't want to look like the embarrassment or the failure that we can't get our kids to eat quinoa because they really just like eating hot dogs. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that if you guys as a family are fine and you don't have concerns from a nutritional standpoint and you feel like this isn't going to be a persistent problem over time, like, so be it. Like, enjoy it and have fun.
Yeah, and also, like, cut kids some slack. I mean, look, I there's a lot of vegetables that I like now, and, like, I love a good mm-hmm. head of broccoli, like olive oil and mm-hmm. salt, roasted at a high mm-hmm. heat so it gets mm-hmm. charred around the mm-hmm. florets, but then it's also still crunchy in the center, and then I'll take it out of the oven and sprinkle a little sea salt, and I'll squeeze some lemon juice on and give it some tang and mix it all around, and that is really delicious, but it still does not hold a candle to a hot dog.
Come on, kid.
They're like, parents, like, your kids, cut them some slack, you know? So, Chris, it would be the obvious thing to do to end this interview by me asking you to give us some tips, Chris. Give us some news you can use. But I am really, really not wanting to do that. I don't want to because then I will only be reinforcing the idea that picky eating is a problem that parents should address by employing some new technique. How old are your kids, Chris?
I have three. I have a 7-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 3-month-old.
Well, we'll set the 3-month-old aside because I assume that he or she is still on a pretty limited diet.
She's a super picky eater. She will only drink milk from her mom.
They're so difficult. Am I right? So do you notice different eating habits between the 7-year-old and the 3-year-old?
Oh, my God, absolutely.
Like yeah. what?
Dramatically different. I mean, my son, who's 7, is like the rule follower, you know, doesn't ever want to get in trouble, always wants to do things right. He's also super adventurous in his eating. Like, he's the one who we don't really have to have problems with trying to get him to taste new foods.
Right. He's the better kid. I get it. Okay, go on.
And my daughter, who's 3, she's the firecracker. She's the one who will look you dead in the eye and pour her milk all over the table just to get a reaction out of you. She keeps me on my toes and keeps me up to date with some of my strategies for helping parents. So it's been a fun challenge.
Tell me a specific story about a time that you tried one of your techniques and it failed and you threw it out the window.
The biggest failure that I do all the time is using dessert as a motivator for eating the foods that I want them to eat. And all the literature says, don't do that, because all it's doing is making them really like the dessert and just knuckle through that terrible experience of whatever that vegetable is. But we still sometimes use that. Sometimes it's not true. We use that a lot because it's such a strong motivator of right. like, hey, we're going to have this nice sweet treat. I just want you to try this little tiny bite of food and just try to get them over that hump of that initial, just take that tiny little bite.
That's Chris Rutt. He's a clinical psychologist in Boston. Next week on The Sporkful, ahead of Passover, I talk with Naama Sheffi about documenting Jewish food from around the world. That work includes her new cookbook, The Jewish Holiday Table. That's next week. While you wait for that one, check out our series, Anything's Possible, about the making of my cookbook. All 4 episodes are in your feed right now. Of course, you can also buy the cookbook right now. Go to sporkful.com/book for more info. There's even signed copies there. Again, sporkful.com/book. And if you want to eat your way across Italy the way I do in Anything's Possible, I have teamed up with the folks at Culinary Backstreets to create a food tour of Italy, hitting a lot of the same spots we feature in the series with many of the same people. Sign up for this tour and you'll eat in Rome with Katie Parla, cook in Lecce with Silvestro Silvestori, and eat spaghetti all'assassina in Bari with me. Come eat pasta in Italy with me. How can you turn it down? It's all happening in November. Get the info at culinarybackstreets.com/sporkful. This episode was originally produced by me along with Ann Sani and Emma Morgenstern. It was edited by Gianna Palmer and mixed by John Delore. The Sporkful team now includes Emma Morgenstern, Andres O'Hara, and Jared O'Connell. Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher Studios. Our executive producers are Colin Anderson and Nora Ritchie. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
Now I'm Connor Jones from Philadelphia, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.